Sri Garga Uvacha.
Sri Garga Uvacha.
Sri Garga Muni said.
Garga Muni said.
Yaduna.
Yaduna.
Of the Yadu dynasty.
Of the Yadu dynasty.
Aha.
Aha.
I am.
I am.
Acharya.
Acharya.
The priestly guide or Purohita.
The priestly guide or Purohita.
Kyataha cha.
Kyataha cha.
This is already known.
This is already known.
Bhuvi.
Bhuvi.
Everywhere.
Everywhere.
Sarvada.
Sarvada.
Always.
Always.
Sutam.
Sutam.
The sun.
The sun.
Maya.
Maya.
By me.
By me.
Samskritam.
Samskritam.
Having undergone the
purificatory process.
Te.
Of you.
Manyate.
Manyate.
Would be considered.
Would
be considered. Devaki Sutta.
Devaki Sutta.
The son of Devaki.
The son of Devaki.
Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Garga Muni said, My dear Nanda Maharaja, I am the priestly guide of the Yadu dynasty. This is known everywhere. Therefore, I will perform the purificatory process for your sons. Kamsa will consider them the sons of Devaki. Purport. Garga Muni indirectly disclosed that Krishna was the son of Devaki, not of Yashoda. Since Kamsa was already searching for Krishna, if the purificatory process was undertaken by Garga Muni, Kamsa might be informed, and that would create a catastrophe. It may be argued that although Garga Muni was the priest of the Yadu dynasty, Nanda Maharaj also belonged to that dynasty. Nanda Maharaj, however, was not acting as a kshatriya. Therefore, Garga Muni said, If I act as your priest, this will confirm that Krishna is the son of Devaki. We don't want that confirmed. Kamsa is looking for the eighth child of Devaki and will do anything to eliminate him. So Garga is, like everyone else involved in these pastimes, primarily concerned with Krishna, concerned for Krishna's well-being, his happiness. Kamsa is also primarily concerned with Krishna, but he's concerned with Krishna as a threat. But still, he's absorbed in Krishna also. Tasmat kena apyupayena mana krishna nivijayet. By one means or another, we should absorb our consciousness in Krishna. We can blame Krishna for our miseries and make him our enemy. He killed my brother. He gave me this trouble. He, you know, ruined my financial situation. Everything was lost. I had a financial fund. The financial fund went bad. It's God's fault. You can blame Krishna and make him your enemy. That's foolish. And a small demon like you, Krishna will not appear in person to deal with you. He'll just put you in confusion and misery. Recommended rather is to absorb yourself in a favorable way with nothing but thought of Krishna. Anukulyena Krishna Anushilanam Bhaktir Uttama. This is the process that we are being taught, the process of Shuddha Bhakti, Uttama Bhakti, pure devotional service, in contrast to mixed devotional service. Alloyed. Prabhupada talks about unalloyed devotional service. You know, Prabhupada has some favorite words he uses all the time. We can look in the dictionary and gain some insight into what Prabhupada means by these words. We shouldn't just use them as empty formulas and repeat them like parrots, not knowing what they mean. Alloy, what's an alloy? Alloy is a mixed metal. know, you take metals can be used in their pure form. Actually, in nature, they don't exist in their pure form. It's by artificial means, by industrial means, intentional things done by human beings, that the pure metal can be extracted. So you can extract by smelting, which is a process of cooking to a high temperature and getting it to the point that even the rocks melt, and you can extract the pure gold from, it's usually caught, mixed in with other minerals in rocks. Yeah, you see specks of gold, but those specks are mixed in with other minerals. So you have to melt it down. That means very high temperature, and a process of separating the different minerals, separating out the gold. And you can do it. They know how to do it. They knew how to do it in primitive times. They knew how to extract gold and other metals, copper, for their use. The king should have gold jewelry. The gods should have gold jewelry. So even primitive people found ways to extract the pure metal, gold. But when it comes time to actually use the gold, pure gold is too soft. You have to again mix it, but this time a controlled mixture to get exactly the texture and the color you want and the degree of hardness. You mix in particular things with the gold to get a particular controlled alloy. That's an alloy. And unalloyed means pure, unmixed. So pure gold may not be very useful for jewelry. Maybe it has other uses. But for jewelry in India, they use 22 karat gold. 24 carats is 100%. 22, I don't know the degree, you can calculate. 22 carats is 80-something percent. And in the West, they use cheaper gold, 18 carat gold, which in India is just considered like brass. These are controlled alloys. They're measured. And the ingredients that are added are intentional. But still, it's an alloy. Now, when it comes to devotional service, some may think that a mixture is good, that pure devotional service is too hard. Yeah, pure gold is too soft, but pure devotional service is too hard. Yeah, you know, we can't, we're ordinary human beings, we can't jump into that, into complete surrender. So our acharyas of our sampradaya recommend that we practice mixed devotional service. Of course, we don't call it that, we think it's pure devotional service. But what we're calling a Uttama Bhakta, first-class devotee in our system, is what would be called a neophyte in the Gaudiya Vaishnava system. But in our sampradaya, we're not really, when it comes down to it, interested in liberation. We want to stay in this world and enjoy and worship Narayana at the same time and be great devotees without having to give up everything. Mixed devotional service. Most are practicing karma mishra bhakti. Stay in this world. Be a paka brahmana. Worship Narayana. And don't worry about liberation. Karma mishra bhakti. Liberation is for great sages, and when you read about it in histories. And then jnana mishra bhakti. The sannyasis in the same sampradaya. The acharyas. They're great jnanis. They went to their gurukuls and studied the Vedanta inside and out. Study so many books, and they're wrangling with other philosophers from the other sampradayas and among themselves, fighting philosophically, and sitting down and thinking about the Supreme Lord, according to Vedanta. This is Jnana Mishra Bhakti. And they're really interested in this mukti, liberation. But they don't see that there's something better than mukti, and that's love of God. They don't think much about that. They're worshipping Narayana for liberation. This is Jnana Mishra Bhakti. Some think that pure bhakti is too hard for us, for regular people. Let's be satisfied with something practical. And therefore, even the Vaishnava Sampradayas are mostly promoting Karma Mishra and Jnana Mishra Bhakti. to suit the popular taste. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is promoting the real thing, hardcore, pure devotional service. And if when you read the standard textbook by the appointed representative of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, she was Rupa Goswami. When you read his Bhaktivinoda Samhita Sindhu, that's the picture you get. That what we should be interested in is Uttama Bhakti. Pure, and as Prabhupada calls it, unalloyed devotional service. Anyabhilashita Shunyam Jnana Karma Adi Anavritam Anukulina Krishnanushilanam Bhakti Uttama. And he gives it a simple definition. It's not something that cannot be understood, or it's impossible to express it in words. It's not that impossible to understand. And he puts it in simple words. You have to, first of all, not be overly motivated by the attractions of karma and jnana. Don't be a karmi, don't be a jnani. Don't be very much interested in this material world. And don't be too much disgusted in this material world. Because the hatred and the love and the hate are just opposite sides of the same coin. Attraction, attachment. Just take the middle road. We don't hate or love this world. We don't care too much about this world. We care about Krishna. That's the position of a pure Vaishnava. We're not even interested too much in liberation. We're interested in doing something to satisfy Krishna and our spiritual masters, who are the proper representatives of Krishna. We should dedicate our whole lives to serving and satisfying our spiritual masters as the way of satisfying Krishna. Otherwise, we may think that my making a big show of being a great devotee, making huge donations, as a karma mishra bhakta, I may think that that's what pleases Krishna. Or I may think that my endeavor for liberation is pleasing Krishna. My pursuit of Vedanta knowledge and my great austerities, I may think that that's what pleases Krishna. But we should find out from Krishna what he wants. And what he wants, bhakti atvanandiriya labhya aham eva Arjuna. Arjuna, I'm only to be achieved by unalloyed devotional service. I can't be achieved by knowledge or by austerities. Certainly not by ordinary materialistic offerings. You can't buy Krishna with big donations. And you can't capture him with dry philosophical knowledge either. Krishna is to be understood and to be pleased, so you can gain Krishna's favor only by pure devotional service. Bhaktiya tvananyaya labhya aham eva. What is it? Yes, I'm sorry, what's the second line? Bhaktiya. That's another verse. Anyway, he says it more than once. By ananya bhakti. So another way of saying it. Ananya. No separate interest. Only interest, Krishna's happiness. We're not pure vidvasis. I don't know, maybe someone here is. But I'm not. And therefore we can't pretend that we can directly do something to please Krishna. We have to do it through the channel of our spiritual masters and the Guru Parampara, by serving them. There, they have their connection with Krishna. By connecting with them, with the Acharyas, we get connected with Krishna and we can do something to satisfy Krishna. Acharya mata yeshe mata sha. The opinion of the acharya, this is the essence of all opinions. This is what's really important. What does my spiritual master want me to do? How does he want me to think? I should be wondering about that, not about my conceptions, fulfilling my ambitions, and worrying about my problems. We should become more mature, not like little babies who all just think about their own themselves, but we should expand our horizons and think about becoming useful in the service of our spiritual masters. That's the attitude of all these great devotees in these pastimes that we're reading about. Garga Muni is from the city. He's not a village boy. In a sense, he's a Paradeshi. He's from the other side of the river, outsider. But the attitude of Mutter is not that much different. For the Vrijbasis, it's like the other side of the world, Mutter or city. But really, it's not that much different. It's just a little more opulence, a little more interest in Krishna's power. They like to see Krishna sitting on the throne, or at least standing by the throne of Rugrasena. They like to see him as a city boy. But still, their interest is in Krishna. And that's a very common denominator of all the devotees in Krishna's pastimes, whether it's the pastimes in Vrindavan, in Mathura or Dwarka. They're all completely obsessed with Krishna and with his happiness. Maybe different ideas of how Krishna can become happy. But that's natural. The different devotees have different moods of service. But throughout the realms of Krishna's manifest and unmanifest pastimes, there's only interest in Krishna's pleasure. And the result, the effect of being so dedicated and so, let's say, obsessed, addicted with pleasing Krishna, is that they become the most satisfied. It's not that they are entranced by this wizard who is exploiting them and depriving them of everything. Just the opposite. The more they surrender to Krishna, the more they enjoy life. This is their secret. We don't get the idea, but they understand it, that the more you give up everything for Krishna, the more you have, the more you get. The less you try to acquire and maintain what you have, the more you're ready to just throw it away for Krishna, the more you end up having. If you measure it materially, you may not be able to accept that formula. You may say, look, these devotees of Krishna are in a bad shape. They can't even pay their rent. They're living like beggars. And you're telling me that they acquire everything by surrendering to Krishna. This is false propaganda. Many may claim. We shouldn't be affected by such complaints. We should understand, and we have to experience it in our own lives. We have to practice giving things up for Krishna and see the results for ourselves. Pratyakshavagamam dharmyam. This path of religion is meant to be experienced for yourself, not just to be understood theoretically. You can even read about how others benefited by surrendering to Krishna. But you want to actually understand and actually realize and be fully convinced, you've got to do it yourself. You've got to try surrendering to Krishna and see what happens. Otherwise, it's all theoretical. And you can calculate that it applies to everybody else but you. Bhajate tadrishi krida yak shudva tatparo bhavet. Krishna is performing in this tenth canto display of his pastimes. Small sample of the things he does, but very vivid. Like a movie, maybe a biography of a great man. The movie only runs for 2 hours, maybe 3 hours. The man's life lasted for 70 years. So you have to greatly condense. You can only show small bits and pieces of his life in 2-3 hours. If you're writing a big biography, a book that's 1,000 pages, you can put more in. Even there, you have to condense. You know, what to speak of a movie presentation of a biography? It has to be very, brief samples of the actual life of the person. So the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam is also like that, a snapshot, or a few snapshots of Krishna's pastimes. Brief descriptions of bits and pieces of Krishna's pastimes is really all we get in the 10th canto. Even though it seems to go on forever, 9,400 verses. But that's not enough to even begin describing Krishna's pleasure pastimes. All the things he did in the 125 years he was on this earth. Even if you spend 125 years describing, that would not be enough to begin. Because what he does is so amazing and so complex. Bhajate, he performed such pastimes so that by hearing about them, devotees will become more and more dedicated to him, tatparo. Therefore, we should hear. We should hear the whole Bhagavatam. We should hear it constantly, with great faith and attention. Okay, sorry, I'm a little short of breath, so I'll have to stop. Any questions?
Yes. Yes, I have two questions.
Yes.
The first one is that you touched upon the devotees wanting liberation, even though devotees...
Gana Mishra Bhaktas.
Yeah, Gana Mishra Bhaktas. Worshipping Narayana and still wanting liberation. What does that mean? They desire to merge into Narayana?
No, they want to go to Vaikuntha. Maybe some of them are half Mayavadis, and they do want personal liberation. Then they're really confused. But even the ones who want to go to Vaikuntha, but their primary motive is not, even if they want to go to Goloka Vrindavan, but that's what they want. They like to enjoy the life of Goloka Vrindavan. And they don't understand that your first motive should be to please Krishna. Then you can get into this place. You can't just barge in without having the qualification of being only interested in Krishna's pleasure. You can't get into Goloka Vrindavan for your own pleasure, but there's some who may be thinking like that, that it's some celestial heaven, no one's allowed in with that attitude. But there's some who may be confused like that. They go Goloka Vrindavan, it sounds like a nice place, I want to go there too. But you forget about that your first interest should be to Krishna's happiness. Yes.
Any questions? Yesterday I was walking back somewhere and I saw on the TV and a person reciting pastimes of Krishna.
Yes.
And I was thinking, is this a professional reciter or is this not? Or maybe from a novice or Pradaya. And it seems Prabhupada speaks about that a lot. Professional reciters in his books, and I said, Well, is it really that common in India? Or?
Yeah, it's really, especially in the holy places. It's all, you see the advertisements with Bhagavad Gata, Bhagavad Sita all the time. Yeah.
How do you know it's a professional reciter?
Well, if it's a picture of this ugly pundit, blown up, instead of a picture of Krishna, that's the first sign that this guy is in it for his own aggrandizement. It's a big business. So most of them are just in it to make money. It's a family business. They learn it from their fathers.
They seem to be speaking on, like, on the bottom of the tongue.
Yeah, but with what attitude? You know, it's beneficial. It's beneficial to hear Bhagavatam in any way. There is recitation of Bhagavatam in the mode of ignorance, and in the mode of passion, and in the mode of goodness and transcendental recitation. This is described in the Bhagavat Mahatmya of the Skanda Purana. So even the recitation in ignorance and passion is beneficial, but it's not fully beneficial. It's not like there's bad recitation of the Bhagavatam. Even a demon reciting Bhagavatam is beneficial. But it's not, you know, it doesn't have a pure or very potent benefit. So when this materialist is reciting Bhagavatam because it's his family business, and he's, you know, you get a lot of prestige and a lot of money by being a professional Bhagavatam reciter. It's a very lucrative business. But if you're in it with that attitude, then, you know, phew, I mean, how does that compare to the way Prabhupada, you know, preached Bhagavatam? And Prabhupada didn't like these Bhagavat Saptahas, even though it's a bona fide process. Prabhupada didn't want anything to do with it. He never participated. I don't think Prabhupada willingly participated in Bhagavat Saptahas ever. Yeah. He didn't like them. Because it's just professional business. It's perverted. But there is benefit from it. It's Bhagavatam's being recited. I can't deny that. But still the guy is a jerk. Yeah.
So it's a question of the attitude of the speaker?
Yes. You want to actually be a proper reciter of the Bhagavatam? Bhagavatam is purely transcendental. You should be transcendental. You should be free from material motives. Do you think it's right, it's nice to preach for money, for prestige? Is that the purpose of preaching? Is that what you joined ISKCON for? You know, so in ISKCON, it's discouraged. Although some devotees may, you know, try to do it anyway. Preach for the purpose of their own material aggrandizement. But we've been taught by Prabhupada, it's not the purpose of preaching. You shouldn't preach Bhagavatam to make money or to build a reputation for yourself. We're supposed to be, you know, humble servants. Haven't we heard that a million times? So in ISKCON we hear it, at least. In other sampradayas, nobody even says it, some other sampradayas. Yeah, I mean the sampradayas of the professional reciters. The father teaches the son, this is our business. You do it like I do it. You can make a lot of money. Yeah, that's what they learn. You know, we're the pundits, we're the gurus. You know, everyone should bow down to us and give us their money. That's not what Prabhupada taught us. He taught us to be humble servants of the Bhagavatam. There's a difference. There's a big difference. And let them go ahead. It has some benefit. But it's not our way of going about it. We're not interested in participating in that or encouraging it. Let them do it if they want. I just wish they wouldn't turn the loudspeakers up so loud. Yeah. Yes, I agree with you.
Thank you.
Yeah.
You just think about that Anna last
time. Yes.
It is free from the positive activities and the speculative knowledge. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu says, Madhana, 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 Paritam, Madhagadhi, Satana.
Yes.
Even he does not want the Lord.
Then not what?
Jagadhi, Satana.
Yes.
But even he does not desire for the Lord also.
Doesn't desire for the Lord. Where does he say that? No, Jagadish is Sambodhanam. He doesn't say, I don't want Jagadisham. He's saying, Jagadish, I don't want anything else. All I want, I must have your pure devotional service. He's not saying, I don't want Jagadisha. That he doesn't deny. He doesn't want Dhanam, Janam, and Kavita, Sundari, Kavitam, that's all. And he doesn't want liberation. But bhakti he wants. Krishna he wants. So, and also jnana, karma, adi, anavrita. Not no jnana, no karma. It's not jnana shunyam. It's anyabhilashita shunyam. And that, even we understand, you can have some times of material desire that's favorable for your devotional service. That you could die, and you don't want to die. You know, you got some disease, and you have a 50% chance of dying, and you pray to Krishna, I want to live so I can continue my service to my spiritual master. I've got work to do. Don't let me die. That's acceptable. That's anyabhilasha, but it's not anyabhilashita. It's not selfish desire. It's a desire. It's a desire. You can call it material, but it's for Krishna's service. So that's not against pure devotional service. To want to live, to carry out the mission of your spiritual master. Even though ordinary wanting to stay in your material body is a material desire. And it doesn't say no karma, no jnana, but not you cannot be dominated by karma and jnana. If you can use them in the service of bhakti, then you can use them, but they must stay subordinate. It doesn't say no karma, no jnana. And it doesn't, I mean, Lord Chaitanya doesn't say, I don't want Jagadisha. That he doesn't say. Yes?
One devotee, he was explaining about that Jagadisha karma means he does not want to merge with the Lord.
But it's not what it means. That's wrong. Not what it means.
So that he explained that next...
No, because it's not accusative. It's vocative. It's not on the list of things he doesn't want. He's saying, oh, Jagadisha. When you have the vocative, it has no connection with the syntax. Oh, Jagadisha, I don't want this, 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 and this. But Jagadisha is not on the list of things he doesn't want. Then it would be Jagadisham. So that's wrong explanation. Sorry. Hey.
But finally, he said that so the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the next trend, asking for Lord.
Yes, yes. Where he says he doesn't want liberation is when he says, Mama Janmani Janmani, in my birth after birth. So when he says, let me take birth after birth, then he's saying, by that, he's saying, I don't want liberation. Okay, so he's denying liberation, but he's not denying Jagadisha. He's calling Krishna, O Lord of the universe. That's his Ishtadeva. Jai Jagadisha Hare. That's the Ishtadeva of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and of Jayadeva Kavi, the Lord of the universe. And they want that Lord of the universe. Not to merge into him, but they want to be a particle of dust at his lotus feet.
But when we do something for Lord, in that time the money, prestige, they're coming. So how the devotee will be avoid that thing so he will achieve the future?
Put it in a bank account for Krishna. Don't waste one penny of it. Don't use any of it for sense gratification. Take all the money and use it for Krishna. And if you don't know how to do it, then give the money to somebody else to do it. Yeah. If you're afraid, I'm just, I can't. Yeah, you put money in my pocket, I'll spend it for sense gratification. Then give the money to your guru. But not that we don't take the money. Prabhupada was shown a picture of the Gujarati sannyasi. Posed photograph, sitting in front of a table of money and refusing to touch the money. And Prabhupada said, oh, you make a photograph like that of me, and I'll have my hands around the money like this. Yeah, so because he wants to use it for Krishna. So he had to follow in the mood of Prabhupada, accept the money. But make sure it's only used for Krishna. That's our duty, to accept it. Yes.
Do you know that Prabhupada did showed Jasovati Nandana Prabhu to read Bhagavata Sapta?
I don't know. Maybe he did.
He told that Dungri Maharaj was doing at that time in the last
I don't know. I don't know the history. Maybe he did.
He
did actually. Okay. Prabhupada told Yashamati Nandan? Okay, to do Bhagavata Sapta.
That was like a special case on.
Yeah, Prabhupada, I'm not saying Prabhupada never told someone to do it, but usually he didn't like it. And now devotees are doing it today, and they're doing something useful. Yes. Thank you.
Krishna
comment and a question.
Yes.
One comment is that generally you can see the audiences of these Bhagavad Saptahans aren't even after, they're not after actually devotional service, they're after satisfying their itching for their religion.
Yes.
You have
the
four aspects of basically sense gratification.
Yes.
Religion is one of them.
Yes.
So they want to satisfy that, and the way they know how to satisfy it is by doing Bhagavad Saptahanas and other pujas and stuff.
Yes.
And generally, you can see, especially in these Indian audiences, that when they get involved in these, it's specifically for that purpose, to satisfy that itching in the back of their mind that they're supposed to be doing some religion.
Yes.
And that's what they do.
Yeah, it's hard in the modern Indian mentality, in general, like one can't say in everybody's case, it's hard to separate matter from spirit. The modern Indian mentality allows you to be a materialist and a great devotee at the same time. Actually, it's incompatible, but the modern Indian mentality doesn't see a contradiction. And so you get very often a mixed attitude like that.
The question I was going to have is like milk touched by the lips of a serpent, it has a poisonous effect. So, according to that, it would seem that it's actually detrimental for somebody after devotional service to listen to such a recitation.
Well, yeah.
Not that it's just, it's okay, but we don't do it, but that actually is detrimental.
Yeah. I don't know if we would say that every one of those reciters are demons. I mean, if their Mayavadis are even slightly affected by Mayavad, then okay, then forget it, not to be heard. But they're just materialistic. Where do you draw the line? It might be slightly materialistic, might be heavily materialistic. How materialistic can you be before it's poison, before it's demoniac? There's sort of a spectrum there, and if someone's just a little materialistic, maybe it's tolerable that someone hears them. I don't know if it's maybe too harsh to label everyone outside of ISKCON who's reciting Bhagavatam as a demon. Yeah. So maybe some of them are sincere, but a little materialistic. Yeah. Unfortunately, most of them are a little or a lot affected by Mayavad ideas. That spoils it. But a little bit of materialism can be tolerated, I think, up to a point, if there's sincerity there.
Yeah, honestly, that's always been a sort of a judgment call that I've been a little bit confused about. Just because, for instance, there's so much music that's being sold within ISKCON that isn't necessarily by devotees who are called for the principal, for instance. And
okay, so it's devotees, it's not outsiders, but it's insiders who aren't following the principles.
That kind of thing, yeah.
Okay. First of all, I would recommend to everyone participating in this program, we don't hear from anybody outside of ISKCON. To go and seriously hear from anybody. Just to play it safe. Especially around here. There's so much spiritual politics. There may be some, advanced Vaishnavas, but outside of ISKCON, they're mostly out to get ISKCON. Yeah, ISKCON is the antagonist. They want to undo ISKCON. Even our Papa's godbrothers. So we should not hear from anybody outside of ISKCON. That's my recommendation. We respect them and we can be friends with them, but we don't go to hear from them. We should stay inside our own camp for who we hear from. Because we have our acharyas and their books. We can read the books. But we shouldn't go outside to listen. Then we get in trouble. And there's political ramifications for every time we go and listen to somebody. Even if we're not damaged, it creates a bad impression. And anyway. And then you're raising the question, what about even inside ISKCON, there's those who are not properly following?
Especially music. There's so much music that's being put out by people who aren't following strictly. What do we do? It's nice.
What I wonder about is, it's nice that we use modern music to attract people to Krishna. But ultimately, our singing and dancing is meant for Krishna's pleasure, not just to attract people, you know, attract materialistic people to come and join the party. But ultimately, it's supposed to be, we sing and dance in front of the deities, I hope, for the deity's pleasure. So what kind of music does Krishna like? Do we ever think about that? You know, does he like this heavy metal stuff? And does he like that? Does that please Krishna? You know, if you're serious, maybe you should think about what kind of music Krishna likes to hear and listen to that. And why does it always have to be so westernized? Is that Krishna's taste? Is that how he likes things? Yes?
One of the problems he's saying is, like, for example, you can go to ISKCON book stands in the temples that sell the books and tapes, and I went, it was at Krishna Balaram, and I asked if I could buy a Prabhupada cassette. He said, we don't sell any Prabhupada bhajans here.
You'll have to go across the street to Gauranga Muni to get.
And I said, yeah. I said, what? And then he tried to sell me to something else, and I said, no, I would like Prabhupada. This is Prabhupada's temple, but you can't get it. And so it's really, it's discouraging, whereas it's looked at, Prabhupada's, his recordings aren't good.
I guess they don't sell.
No, they don't sell it at all.
I mean,
maybe they changed, but at least 2 years ago when I wanted a tape, they said, we don't sell.
Well, I think I've seen them there recently. But.
That's good. It changed before it was done.
Yes.
There was a discussion with whom about this.
Uncommon. Yes.
And something was arranged.
Yes. And we have to promote Prabhupada. I'm not saying I said something about music. I don't mean we shouldn't use music to attract people. But there's a higher level in which you should consider what kind of music is Krishna like to hear. Yes, sir.
Okay, I don't know how this is going to come out, but I just want to get some proper understanding clear. Okay, at my temple, it seemed, like in my career, it seemed that a lot of the management was geared towards pleasing an Indian Hindu audience.
Aha.
Because...
Yes.
This is something that seems to have happened in North America.
Because it's the only way they can pay their rent.
Exactly. And now they put some like the whole thing got watered down, it seems, from what I see. So
yeah,
they put a Ganesh in the temple.
Uh-oh.
Lord Shiva.
Yes.
On the side, just so that people can come.
Yeah.
And at the same time get some benefit from seeing the deities and Ganesh is there. Well, and then one time, and you see a lot of these, like a few materialists, like they want both, they want the material and the spiritual, okay, and that's mostly a congregation on Sunday.
Yes.
And so the preaching is mostly. Is mostly directed towards them. It seems that the managers are thinking in competition with other Hindu temples. One time there was one person from Vrindavan who was just coming by and he asked if he could sing, and he seemed like he was a professional singer. Not a professional reciter, a professional singer, and they allowed him.
Yeah.
And it seems a lot of these different... So it seems as, I don't know, I'm just trying to understand how to rectify the situation or just understand things clearly, like how's the deviation and how to deal with the Hindu community, which has kind of like taken...
Well, I mean, what can you do with that situation?
When
you become the temple president somewhere, you can do better.
Yeah, yeah.
But we can't fight City Hall.
Excuse me?
I'm sorry. I mean, what can you do?
Yeah, now, but I'm just thinking, like, how do you rectify a situation?
Well, the Brahminical thing to do would be to speak the truth, not to make politics.
I'm trying to understand, like, I think it will just come with time.
Speak your, you know, you, if you have a, you're, if you have a better understanding, then you should tell it to those who are willing to hear it. That's all. I mean, we should you know, propagate correct understanding. And those who are, you know, can understand it will try to do that, try to do the right thing.
Because maybe also I don't fully know, I might have some ideas and some deviation, but I might not fully know, like, what Prabhupada wants, in one sense.
Right.
Like, so many devotees say so many things.
Prabhupada would very often react to things in ways we didn't expect. When he'd be spontaneous and transcendental, and we would miscalculate what we thought Prabhupada would do. So he's not here right now to judge this.
So but, I have to accept the opinion of my spiritual master?
Or? I wouldn't contradict the opinion of your spiritual master. Yeah. I mean, you're allowed to think and talk, but there's a limit to what, as individuals, we can do. Krishna will take care of the situation. Krishna will rectify. If there's something being done wrong in ISKCON, it's Krishna's institution. He'll correct it. Mm-hmm. We can only do so much. You can speak to people. You can speak to your GBC if you want to, if you see something wrong. Proper channels for doing things, not to get onto calm and make a stink in front, all over the world, just to stir up trouble. But speak. If you have something to complain about, go to the proper responsible people and speak to them.
Okay.
Anyway, you're here now.
You're not
over there, so you don't
have to. I don't know. I just thought that.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But it'll be rectified. If it's wrong, Krishna will correct it. And those, you can speak to those who are responsible, and they should, on Krishna's behalf, do the right thing.
Thank you.
Hi, Guru Prabhu, then Sarvaka.
You were told about the listening from ISKCON devotee. And 2-3 years in Delhi, the devotee is doing Bhagavatam Satta.
Who is?
One devotee.
ISKCON devotee?
In auditorium, ISKCON auditorium.
Yes.
He is doing Bhagavatam Satta.
Yes.
And in 7 days, he is completing Bhagavatam.
Yes.
And the first day is starting 3 days like the professional recital.
Yes.
3 days Bhagavatam Mahatma. Then he is doing Krishna Lila. Then he is ending this Bhagavatam.
Yes.
So we can listen that?
I think so. Unless someone is... I think so. Yeah. You have to be a little discriminating. But I think that particular devotee, you can listen to him. I've listened to him once in a while. I've heard him speak. So
what is the difference between the professional and...
Because he's a Prabhupada follower, I hope. Yeah. I don't know him that well. I don't know him that well, but what I heard sounded okay. Yeah. I know the devotee, and I've heard him. Yeah. So in that particular case, I don't see anything wrong. He's trying to do something for preaching. Even if it's the wrong thing, we'll find out sooner or later. He's making an attempt, a sincere attempt, let him try it.
But how we can say that Prabhupada's followers, because he's listening from...
But that's not a professional speaker, that's a surrendered devotee.
No, I just said that...
Should we say that Shukadev Goswami shouldn't have done Bhagavad Sattva either?
Yes, it's the same thing. But he's listening from Mudhuli Sastri's message, and
yes.
He's doing, imitating to Mudhuli Sastri's lecture.
I know, but the thing is, what matters is the devotee's attitude. If he has a surrendered, sincere attitude, that even if he's doing something wrong, Krishna will correct it. And if Krishna likes it, he'll be successful. But if he's doing it with a pure attitude, then we why not listen to him? I mean, a devotee maybe makes mistakes. He says something philosophically wrong. It doesn't mean we should never listen to him. We should sit in the class, and then when he says something wrong, we should at the end of the class, we should ask him, "You said this." But isn't that contradictory, Prabhupada? It's not that we shouldn't listen. If a devotee is sincere, even if he's not perfect, we can listen to him. If he's sincere, follower of Prabhupada. That's our criterion. Yeah. It's not like, oh, so-and-so, you know, says wrong things. He's got some wrong idea. Therefore, I can't ever listen to his Bhagavatam class. Yeah, that's not, you know, it's not like that. And so-and-so is doing a thing he shouldn't do. Well, Krishna will correct him, if he is.
Then, what is the meaning of authority? If he will not follow the authority, Prabhupada or the seniors to...
Well, is he not following the authority? Did he wasn't told he can do it? He wasn't authorized to do it?
No. He told that I am doing for public.
But he wasn't, his guru didn't give him permission, the GBC didn't give him permission. He's doing it in the ISKCON property, the ISKCON authorities must be permitting it. So he has authorization.
No, authority, he got the authority that to do Bhagavatam Sapta, but what he is speaking is not authority.
Oh, okay. Well, I don't know that. I don't know, maybe you're right. Then go ask the GBC and your guru... And ask, why is this being done? I mean, I saw in the restaurant some ladies were playing, gambling. They're playing this housey, this bingo, for money in the ISKCON restaurant. So we can complain about that. That's a mistake. It shouldn't be allowed. You know, four regular principles. You shouldn't have people smoking and drinking in the restaurant or prostitutes coming and doing their business in the restaurant. So why should they be gambling in the restaurant? In Krishna's restaurant. You know, you can complain about that if you want, but you go to the proper authorities and tell them, this is happening, is that right? You know, so if you think that devotee is preaching in an unauthorized way, then you should go to the GBC and ask him, should this be allowed? If you think so. That's going through proper channels. Yes, sir.
I would like to clarify for myself. So, was it Shrivastakur who was listening to Tirunath Pandit? He was kicked out by him. He was listening to Tirunath Pandit and he was...
I'm sorry, who was?
Shrivastakur.
I don't know who that is.
Srivastakur.
Srivastakur was listening to...
Devananda Pandit.
Devananda Pandit. And he was showing symptoms of ecstasy.
Yes,
and Devananda Pandit kicked him out. Yes.
So, in some case, pure devotees can listen to this and get some benefit, but in another case, they cannot. So, how to put to this?
Well, you need someone with the intelligence of Sarup Damodara to discriminate. Yeah. You know, in that case, you know, who can go and recite before Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Only Sarup Damodar could make that decision. Even the other associates didn't dare to decide. You know, the poet came to Gadadhar Pandit and to other devotees. They said, oh, please show this to Lord Chaitanya. And he said, okay, but let's go ask Sarup Damodar first. He's the one to decide. He's the only one who can decide. Very tricky question. What actually pleases Krishna and what doesn't? Only the Acharya knows that. But we have a rule of thumb. We should listen to ISKCON devotees. And don't take the risk of listening to anybody outside. We don't know. We don't have the intelligence of Sarup Damodar to know who's pleasing Krishna and who isn't. Maybe people outside, devotees outside, are pleasing Krishna. And maybe there's some devotees inside who are displeasing Krishna by the way they're preaching. But we just use the simple rule of thumb. We listen to ISKCON devotees and avoid listening to others just to be safe because we can't really tell. We don't have the intelligence of Sarup Damodar to judge.
What about Shrivastakur? He was still in ecstasy when listening.
Well, Devananda Pandit is also an associate of Lord Chaitanya, I think. He's just playing the role of a materialist. Am I wrong? I think he's also a participant in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes. You know, I think he became, by Shrivastakur's influence, he became purified. Yeah, okay, so he's not an ordinary person either. Yes.
And saying that the sentence over and over again is very, playing it safe by staying with an ISKCON. That's the bottom line. Above that also,
yes.
I mean, it's usually pretty easy to see when someone is deviating also.
Yes.
There's so many people, like you said, in ISKCON, who do deviate, and we have to discriminate, and it's not that difficult.
Yes.
Usually...
We know what the rules are. Okay. Yes.
So, people usually that are doing something else, they make it pretty obvious because actually they want to be seen as deviant. They actually have a rebellious mood, and you can usually see it.
Yes.
There's people in ISKCON you can see who are rebellious.
Yes.
And it's not that they're making a mistake, they're doing it on purpose.
Yes.
If someone's making a mistake, like you said, it's an innocent mistake.
Yes.
And they're not trying to deviate. There's
yes.
a difference.
Yes. Big difference. Yes. We have to be discriminating. We should be friends with all our God brothers, with all Vaishnavas. We should be friendly. But it, you know, that friendship has to be discriminating too. You don't get too close to someone whose association might be bad for you. Even in your own company. You know, but it's not like we should pick and choose, you know, today so-and-so is giving class and I know that he, you know, he's got this problem, therefore I won't listen to his class and I'll skip out of class. It's a deauthorized class. You know, so just like the prasadam, you know, the cook has been appointed by the temple authorities, and if they didn't make a serious mistake, hopefully, you know, what he offers is accepted by Krishna. And it's by the offering it's purified. And how can we refuse the prasadam in the ashram on the basis of we think the cook has got a black aura or this or that? Yeah. Yeah. You know, it's been offered to Krishna. Krishna accepted it. How am I going to refuse it?
What if the cook does have a black aura?
Then the management should look into that. Yes?
The cook has a black aura?
No, this was something I heard in Lithuania, complaints about the cook there, you know, years ago. Hare Krishna. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam.